Continuing the meeting at 5 o'clock, 5:02 Pacific, from earlier today, and all members of the advisory board are present. This is Gary Hent, and I'm handing it over to the chair, Ryan Payne.
Hey guys, I appreciate your patience as I'm traveling through what someone called the desolation of Oregon, but I got a pretty beautiful view of the sun setting across this dry lake bed that's not so dry at the moment, and so I'm glad to speak with you all. I want to make this statement before we begin, address before we two issues.
We've addressed
that. What's that?
We've addressed them. I explained to the board that you had given an affirmative vote to both of them, so those are dispensed with. They're approved. You give your affirmative to both of them, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I believe that what we're about to discuss is very likely to be the next big event that's going to go on, and it's going to depend a lot on the sheriff now, as we've laid some things in his lap, and I'll get into that. But essentially, we have such a gross overreach with this one that we can't possibly ignore it, and to do so would cede so much ground. A precedent of corruption and tyranny would have been set to such a high degree that that I'm not sure exactly how it would come back without some form of violent resistance. And so I think that this is a very heavy matter that we're about to discuss. So with that, I'll move on to what's going on. Has everybody had a chance to review the brief on the Hammond situation?
Yep.
I hope so. I kind of went a little bit further and explained the ramifications of option two and where option three came in.
All right.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I'm not going to go into any more details because there are more infringements and such involved, and sitting with Mrs. Hammond today, and Hammond Bundy sitting with Steve Hammond yesterday, made pretty clear that they want the land and they're going to do whatever it takes to get it, and they've already taken quite a bit of the land. One of the things I think that wasn't in that brief is that the Hammonds originally owned another ranch adjacent to the one that they own now, and that they were forced to sell that ranch in order to put together enough money to keep their cattle operation going. And in selling that ranch, they were able to put enough money not only to keep the operation going, but to buy the ranch adjacent to them. So they've already lost land, and they stand to lose a whole lot more. Aside from just the land grab itself, is the issue of the obvious corruption of the courts and the exercise of authority in jurisdictions that they don't have, that they have no authority within. And so it's pretty egregious, and it's very obvious, and I think we need to do whatever we can, and the Bundys feel the same at this point, and are willing to work closely with us to ensure that this gets all of the attention that it needs in order to garner a response if the vote goes that way here. As far as the Hammonds go, at this point, we weren't able to meet with Dwight Hammond, who's the father, the owner, of the ranch. He was out doing some other things. And as far as we can tell, they don't really want to talk to anybody about support. Steve Hammond, the fact that we just showed up on their doorstep is kind of how we got in, because they didn't feel like they wanted to, they weren't going to be rude and tell us to go away. But Hammond helped out yesterday with the ranch for a few hours while he was talking to Steve. His opinion is that Steve is broken. I believe he's 43 years old or something like that, right around there. He has three kids, one's in college, and then the other two will still live with him. He's broken down to the point where they don't want to fight anymore. He, as Ammon described it, he's at a point of peace with the decision to submit themselves to the sentence, the imprisonment, and he doesn't want to do anything to disrupt that peace that he has. Of course, Ammon asked him directly whether or not he believed that when he got out of prison that it would all be over, and he said no. So he, basically where he's at now is submission, complete submission.
Let me interrupt.
And he just wants to...
Let me interrupt here for... I want to clarify something, if I could. The my understanding from Good's article is if they go to prison, they're going to lose the land because they can't pay the $400,000. Is that correct or not?
They have a ranch hand that lives on the property, and he is probably capable of performing the daily tasks involved with running the ranch, but he's not a tested manager, so they're not positive that he'll be able to do it. So given that, he's really the only other option they have as far as keeping the ranch going. So it's kind of a connection of two instances. If they go to prison, then the management of the ranch will be gone, and thus they won't be able to afford to pay the fines. Now, Ammon and I advised him today, you know, that the idea would be that they do not go to prison, nor do they pay the fines. So we'll see where all that goes. They're going to have a family discussion and such. Mrs. Hammond, so that's kind of where Steve is at. He didn't want us to come back to talk today. And when he found out that we were talking with his mom today, he was pretty mad about it with her, and told her, don't talk to these guys, don't meet with them. She came back to her house and invited us back in again, and we had another couple hours of discussion. So, quite honestly, the most fight that's still in the family resides within Grandma, as she referred to herself. And these other men... they're ranchers, they're strong, tough guys, and they did spend some time fighting all of this. They've just been broken. Mr. Hammond, I can only go based on what my conversation with him before, which was essentially the same as the son, that they just don't believe that there's anything that can be done.
So
that's what...
They both served the prison sentences from the first decision.
Correct.
They did.
Yep. So, yeah, you've got double jeopardy, you've got Bill of Rights infringements. I mean, the list goes on how these guys are being trampled. So that's the Hammond side of it, where at this point, it looks like there's not going to be a request. Mrs. Hammond, Susan, she's very sharp on the Constitution, on natural law, and on how they've been trampled. She's very familiar with the Oregon state law, so she's no dunce. There's no doubt about that. And I think that if anyone were going to convince the father and son that they need to take a stand, then she's probably it. As I said before, they were displeased that she was meeting with us in the first place. So they're going to talk about it, and then she has my contact information, and she'll be given us a call or not. What Ammon was very clear on was that regardless of whether or not they desire assistance, and if you guys read the letter that I forwarded from Ammon, from the Bundy family, which Ammon put together, then it makes clear their position that it doesn't really matter whether or not the Hammonds request assistance or desire assistance in any form, because we the people have an obligation to stand against tyranny wherever it resides, particularly within our own borders. And so that's their position. And we went to meet with the sheriff after we got done with Mrs. Ammon. And the sheriff is he's a sharp guy. He's a military veteran, retired military veteran. He was very excited to meet with us. Apparently, just today, his county attorney had handed him an email from the Bundy Ranch blog site, that is the letter that Ammon had put together. So he said that he read the letter, and it wasn't very long after he had read it that Ammon called him to schedule our meeting today. So he proclaimed that he doesn't believe in coincidences and such. He was pretty anxious to meet with us, and he was very polite. It was obvious at different points of the conversation that he's most likely thinks the way that we think. He's liberty-minded. He even made some statements along the lines of, at some point in this country, the line is going to have to be drawn and people are going to have to stand on it. And even to the point of alluding to violent revolution and the people coming together and making it. And so he seems like he's pretty keen on what's going on. When Ammon got through telling him what he wanted to hear, the particulars of what happened at the Bundy Ranch, after which one of his statements was that no matter what happens, he will not be allowing federal agents to come in and confiscate weapons or perform any of the other numerous infringements that they want to perpetrate on the people. It won't be happening in his jurisdiction. But coupled with that, he didn't say directly, but he alluded to... One second. luckily, I'm coming down with a pretty nasty cold when all this is going on. So, anyway, he said that he won't be allowing violence of any sort to be taking place in his county, regardless of which side it comes from. And so it was made clear to him that if the decision is made to defend the Hammonds, he also does not take up that stand himself, that we will be defending the Hammonds regardless of anybody's proclaimed authority or anything like that. So, which he didn't argue with, he didn't disagree with it. He said that he believes that the people are going to have to take a stand because government at all levels is failing them. So it sounds to me more or less like he was proclaiming this, I'll not be allowing that in my county, more as a matter of protocol and procedure, as opposed to something he actually believes in. Because by all rights, his proclamations of belief were along the lines of a revolutionary idea, a movement of the people.
What scenario did you present to the sheriff?
Ammon, I basically supported Ammon's statements, and I offered the sheriff a hypothesis or a scenario and asked his opinion of it. I said, if the Hammonds decide that they are not going to be they are not going to report in for their sentence, to serve out their sentence, then you have to be aware, obviously aware, that the federal government is going to send agents out to arrest them. And then I asked him, what are you going to do about that? Do you intend on stopping that? And he wouldn't answer at this time. Basically, what he wants is, he wants every bit of information on this. He's going to his county attorney already to get familiar with it. Ammon said he would provide him with whatever he could. I think that we should probably provide him with all of the facts. And then he's curious about the opinions of those facts.
Okay, so what you presented basically was option one. Was option three even discussed with the sheriff?
Not in a particular sense. What was said is that at this point, it looks like there's going to be an effort to not allow the Hammonds to be arrested or serve one day in federal prison.
He's supportive of that so long as he's not a player, but he would abide by Oregon law, not federal law, as far as allowing the feds in, I take it.
Not necessarily that he's not a player. We went into further discussion on the state of things and the progression of tyranny in this country and the corruption at all levels, and he's mostly in agreement with our mindset that this is where it's going. And so I made it clear to him that
I think the way I'm looking at the sheriff is also he's a politician and he's going to play it neutral probably until the last point. He's going to play it neutral until he sees who's going to come out on top, and then he's going to stand.
In my dealings with other sheriffs and elected law enforcement officials, I agree with you. And that was the first point that Ammon and I made when we walked out, was that, he was very supportive of everything we were saying, even to the point of essentially it was semi-obvious that he's most likely going to take a position of support of what we're saying and in support of the Hammonds. He just wants to clarify all that stuff. But I've had, I've been stroked by government officials before just to have them, reverse their actions as opposed to their statements. So I agree with you.
We have to rely on no reliance on the sheriff, just hope that he does take the right side.
Right.
Right. Exactly that. And he, it was made clear to him that he has an opportunity at this point to begin that stand against the federal government. There's sheriffs who have done it, and it doesn't get publicized often, and definitely not massively, but, every time they do it, the federal government essentially just goes away once they realize who they're dealing with, and then I'm sure they make sure that monies go into getting that sheriff replaced with one that they can control. But so at this point, he welcomed further contact. He wants to stay in contact with us and the Bundys. So he's interested in doing the right thing. We'll put it that way. So that's kind of where it's at. That's about all the information that I have.
Did you get the turn-in location and time and everything?
They don't have it. They were told that they would have it within 2 to 3 weeks of being sentenced, and now it's been over a month. They still don't have it.
What about getting the documents we talked about, you and I, Ammon and I talked about?
At this point, there's no chance of that happening. Basically, they're not working. They're not working with anybody at this point.
What's the name of that sheriff?
Ammon again. Let's see if he could track them down and get them to me. He knows where to look.
One second, I'll get.
Is he there?
Who's that, Ammon?
Yeah.
No. David M. Ward, WARD.
All right. What county is that?
Harney, HARNEY.
All right.
I really hate the fact that they're not working with us.
Say that again.
I said I really hate the fact that they're not working with us. That just makes it all the more difficult.
Well, it changes the plan of action, that's for sure.
And you got to look at it that they've been dealing now with this for 12 years. They're beat.
Right.
They didn't see any hope before. Now at the last second, you've got people who say they want to help, and they're like, wow.
Well, she was. I made one statement as I was walking out the door, and she wrote this down, and she intends on telling her husband and son this specifically. But the statement that I made was, at this point, the decision that you guys have to make is whether you're going to watch as we defend your liberties, or you're going to stand with us as we defend your liberties. But regardless, it's looking like we're going to defend your liberties whether you want it or not. So
the question that has to be answered then somewhere along the line is, will they sit back, will they support us from a distance, sit back and do nothing, or will they oppose us?
Now, I don't think they're going
to
oppose us.
The family meeting, well, I know, but you're going to have to talk to her after they have the family meeting and assure that they're not going to oppose us, because everything else aside, that would be disastrous. I think that
would be a
condition that required us to walk away from it.
Well, yeah, I guess that I would have a contention with that. I mean, is the defense of liberty dependent on the support or lack thereof of the person in need of defense?
Well, there's that tough question for the remainder of the board. If somebody Kim Davis told Oath Keepers, I don't want you down here, what effect does that have on us? We're telling something that they can't abide by the law, that they've accepted the consequences of that law.
Yeah.
We're telling them they can't abide by the law, and they have already accepted the consequences of that law. Where do we stand if that's the image that goes out?
Yeah, the question is, do we allow then tyranny will move forward until people take a stand in front of it? And the analogy I used last night was with Ammon was that essentially the whether you have a request or not is what formulates where the barrier between tyrants and the oppressed is built. Is it built directly around the oppressed, or at some point does the barrier need to be moved closer and closer to the tyrants?
But I think what Gary's getting at is, we can step in and do something as long as they don't say, we don't want them here. We're accepting everything that is our thing, and if we just show up to defend their rights and everything else, and then they go out publicly and say, we didn't ask them here, we don't want them here, and so that's going to paint us as a bunch of rabble-rousers.
Yeah, they don't have, we're taking away from them the right to determine their liberty.
And we're stopped. I mean, yeah, they have that choice to turn themselves in over to the dark side. They could turn themselves in over to the dark side, or if they're not.
Are we here just to protect the light, or are we here to shine light on the darkness?
You can
do that without preventing them from turning themselves in.
Yeah, and without giving us a black eye.
Right, and the key thing is OMD is getting off the ground. Can we risk at this time looking like Oath Keepers in the Ken Davis affair? Regardless,
don't get me wrong, Ryan. If they ask, we'll go running with fucking everything. But if they choose not to. Yeah, there's other ways you can do it to bring that to light, like, standing out in front of the courthouse when they go to turn themselves in with posters saying, you know, but if you go out there armed to the gills and say, we're not going to allow it to happen, and then they sit there and say, we didn't ask them to do this, we already accepted our fate, and we're willing to do it, that's going to make us look like a bunch of fucking lunatics.
So what's the, I guess, what is the source of tyranny? Is the source of tyranny the acquiescence of the populace to the tyranny, or is the source of tyranny from the tyrants? And
well,
and which needs to be addressed?
Let's look at it this way. We all have inherent or God-given or natural rights. Do we have the right, then, to deny them their right of choice? And I think...
Right, you disregarded my...
In the conversation... the freedom of choice is necessary, and we're taking that freedom of choice away from them.
That statement disregards the question that I just posed.
Well, philosophically, you're right. However, are we players in it? Do you have a right to go into another person's house and stop he and his wife from quarreling?
No, but I surely have the right to... prevent the government from inflicting tyranny on the populace.
But we're not talking about the populace, we're talking about the Hammonds.
The
Hammonds are a specific subject.
We're willing to do everything we can that is not... everything we can, we're willing to do up until the point of to where we... I'm not going to kidnap them. We can't kidnap Hammonds just to be able to prevent the government from... to prevent them from turning themselves into where they're trying to go to start their sins. So it's kind of like a plan. It's plan A and plan B. It's we need to, if they don't want our support, well, yeah, we should still shed light on this tyranny that's taking place. And we oppose it as best we can without kidnapping somebody.
The determination, I guess, that, From that point of view, and we haven't gone into Ammon, and I spent a great deal of time last night discussing options on how to move the barrier from around the family if they don't request it, because that's I agree with what you're saying. You can't build the barrier around the family if they don't want it, but the tyranny still exists, and the question is, are you specifically defending protecting the innocent from a tyrannical oppression, or is the goal to get rid of the tyrannical oppression?
Well, let's look at a probable scenario based on something you and I discussed yesterday, I think. I think Emma was there, too. If we go to the courthouse and ask for the rescission or the overturning of the decision of the appellate court, and we... encircle the courthouse, nobody in, nobody out, and the Hammonds come up, if that's the turn-in point, and the Hammonds come up and want to go in, are we going to keep them from going in and turning themselves in? Are we going to physically restrain them from entering to abide by what the law, they accept the law, tells them they have to do?
And, Ryan, when you first contacted me about this whole OMD thing, we had a conversation on the phone. And I said, part of what needs to happen is we have to educate people. And if they choose to not accept our help, we can still start educating people that look at what's going on. Look at what's happening. Everybody's being educated by the government, you know, that's why everybody's so scared shitless of them. But we also have to educate people so that we don't look like we are the dirtbags just wanting to start a fight somewhere.
Yeah, just doing what the government's doing.
Nobody is disputing what you're saying, Ryan, about when do we step up to tyranny. But we have We have to do it in the right way.
And OMD is still young, obviously. But what Gary just said also would be another awesome plan of attack. So we're not protecting the Hammonds, but we're surrounding a courthouse, and you're shut down. Rather than protecting the Hammonds, we're shutting down this illegal place.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're probably too young to be taking on to that. But
well, the question still arises, John, if we say nobody in, nobody out of the courthouse, basically lay siege to it, and the Hammonds come up and say we want to go turn ourselves in, do we stop them? Do we have
yes,
the right
well, at that point, what we're saying is that there's no place for them to turn themselves into.
Right.
But are we going to physically restrain them, though, or are we going to, you know, spread the apart and allow them to walk in if they want to? Are we
I
going
think
to
OMB is so young.
To go in? What?
Well,
yeah,
the use of OMB is not really
nobody
relevant.
In, nobody out, and I know, but I'm just also looking at our success factor. Do we want to be a little blip on the map and then OMB gets wiped out, like, really quick? Or... because when you surround a courthouse, now we're talking National Guard, especially with armed patriots. It's
mm-hmm.
So are we capable of ending that off? Are we, or do they just come in and crack us with tear gas and disperse us and arrest us? And now we're all just a little blip on the radar.
You know what happens if they do that. That's not going to be tolerated.
I know what'll happen in Portland, but I don't know what'll happen around the rest of the country, because even patriots might say they were a fool to tell the people they couldn't turn themselves in. That, you know, there's an easy way out even for other patriots. We have no way
yeah.
to keep them. Let's go back to another thing you and I discussed. Do you have a right to stop somebody from committing suicide, or do you only have a right to try and talk them out of committing suicide?
We only have the right to talk them out of it.
And that's exactly where we are, isn't it?
Yep. And because no. if they want to commit suicide by turning themselves in, we can't stop that.
And we'd look like fools.
Well, there's a gun sitting on the table across the room. And the person who the Hammonds who want to commit suicide have to get up and walk over to that gun and pick it up and put it to their heads and pull the trigger. And I can tell you that regardless of their own free agency and those types of things, that I'm going to make sure that they can't get to that gun to shoot themselves if I know that that's their intention.
That's kind of oranges, because that's not applicable here, because they have accepted the edict of the court, and they want to turn themselves in. That's a whole lot different, and it's not costing a life. It's costing them 5 years. They understand the consequences, and they know they risk their ranch. So they've made a rational decision not to commit suicide, but perhaps to give up their livelihood dependent on the ability of the guy to manage the ranch. So talking suicide...
Is there a differentiation what do you want to call it? Is there a level of importance differentiating life and liberty? Is life worth living without liberty? So the question is, and I use that analogy of the gun sitting on the table because it's applicable in the sense that the gun is the federal government, and the Hammonds are going to willingly walk over to that building and turn themselves in. Effectively putting welcoming the gun to be put to their heads by another entity. It's not even.
So are you going to follow them around so that they can't get another gun on another table in another room in another building?
Or a bottle of pills, whatever. I mean,
I personally think that our best course of action, giving it. I mean, I they're already coming to terms with what they think has to be their fate. And I think, given that the fact that they don't want any help, we're still obligated to kind of rally the protesters. I think that's the best we can do at this point. And that's just my two cents right now.
Well,
like, that's probably where I'm going to
be. I've got an opinion about protesting. Last time I saw protesting work was between, say, 1965 and 1972.
Yeah.
Millions of people were on the street on a single focus issue, and we ain't going to get that. So protesting is a waste of time. Unless the signs are on pitchforks, at least it's an implied threat at that point. But sticks on signs, you know, they've G20, you know, they don't work.
I
don't think that OMD wants to be involved in just protest issues. I mean, our purpose is not civil disobedience, but civil defiance. But we've got to have a good, clean task to work on.
I agree. I'm just saying the only reason I'm saying that is just to be able to still shed light to the issue rather than letting it get swept under the carpet. And it kind of just puts it in our resume that you know, we don't agree with this.
Because
if we can't get all the documents, then we can't even put together an accurate picture. And I wouldn't want to ask people to go to a demonstration when they don't know what the whole picture is. The Bundy Ranch.
Yeah, that's fair.
Gentlemen, can I break in a minute? Gentlemen?
Yeah.
Can I ask Ryan a question, please?
Yes, sir.
Ryan, you and Emmett had a chance to talk about this pretty extensively and everything. You've heard some of the chat about what we can and can't do. I'd like to perhaps hear the results of your thoughts of what you might think would be viable at this point. Thank you.
I think that if the reason that I say that, made that opening statement of the gravity of the situation is that the infringements here are so egregious and so obviously corrupt and such an abuse of power that it is an opportunity to rally support around the idea of halting the movement of the federal government in a particular direction. So if I were to reference a particular operational plan and in a very general manner of speaking, then what we would have to do without a request is not make sure that there's nothing for the Hammonds to turn themselves in, that the entity, the source of the tyranny, the source of the oppression, has to be removed from the equation, or at least mitigated to the point of submittance. With enough time to, you know, that the Hammonds essentially are free by default. And so if I had to get more particular about it, something like what Gary said, you know, laying siege to the courthouse or wherever it is that they're supposed to turn themselves into, we need to remove, if we don't have a request, then you have to put that barrier closer to the tyrants. Which means that we have to remove their ability to execute the sentence on the Hammonds.
Well, and that's what John was talking about.
Yeah, but let's follow the extension on that. They can turn themselves into basically any federal agent. They don't necessarily have to have a physical place. So how would we go about removing their ability to do that? Is kind of what I'm trying to get on a practical note. Regardless of some of the philosophicals, but how would we perhaps do it practically? And then we can see what's within the art of the possible.
I understand what you're saying. Yes, they can turn themselves into any federal entity, and therefore you're surely not going to be able to remove all of them all at once. It would have to be a focal point, and then the question becomes, is it just an ideological target, or is it a specific target that we're defending against?
When is this?
I see your point.
When's the family meeting supposed to take place?
I imagine it'll be soon. She didn't say specifically.
So I would say we're hold up on anything until you figure out what they decide. I mean, we can draw up plans to ring the courthouse and everything else. But, I mean, that's about it. Until
but, Dennis, do you have a... Yeah, I agree with you that all we can do at this point is postulate and then decide on a plan of action or not. Dennis, sure. What are your thoughts on, or do you have any thoughts on the question that you just asked? Or
I guess my thoughts are is that it's extremely difficult to limit the access of federal agents to the area. And then you're forced to go back to where, as someone suggested, the potential kidnapping of the Hammonds, which doesn't seem to be the best idea.
We can't do that, yeah.
Right. So that's why I was going more to, if we can't come up with anything practical, then maybe it's not within the art of the possible right now. It may not be palatable for us to say that. But we have to kind of, again, just sort through the options. And I was wondering, you and Damon had some time, and, you know, you're obviously put a lot of energy into it and focused on it, just what your thoughts were as to the viability of some of the scenarios. I would agree that it's all speculation until we find out whether or not they're going to request, whether they're going to stand by and not interfere, or whether they choose to interfere. And that perhaps is the answer Mrs. Hammond is going to give you.
I have one more suggestion, and I'm hoping I don't regret it. And it, I know it's an off-the-wall idea, but what if we offered them a way out to where they are able to wait it out? And by what I mean by this is we're already sitting here willing to go toe-to-toe with the federal government. So what is kidnapped? What if we know that we're not really kidnapping these people? And we're giving them a way out. We're letting them know that, okay, your instructions are to just stay in here in the house. If we fail, we can make it look like we did kidnap you. We have you locked in a room in the house. So if we fail, they have a way out to where it's not going to implement, or it's not going to, you know, put any more impact on them.
The problem with that is if they say they were kidnapped, then we're subject to criminal penalties for kidnap, especially if they cross state lines. But even if they don't cross state lines.
Aren't we subject to other stuff? I mean, again, if we fail, we're talking about going toe-to-toe with the federal government.
Right, we are. But let's say, you know, the federal government can come back later and charge us with kidnap if they say they were kidnapped. If they say who kidnapped them under pressure, then... You know, we're going to foreclose on your property for the $400,000 unless you tell us who the kidnappers were, something like that, and they give names, then some people are going to prison or we're going to have to defend them. So now we've got something beginning to mushroom out into other things.
And the one difficulty that I have with it is if at the basis of any action the cause is to maintain a high degree of morality, then I don't think we would want to taint that notion of morality with something like kidnapping, even if it were feigned.
Right. Now, basically, we've got three doors. We can enter any one of the three. We have an option of entering any one of the three doors unless we close one. Those doors are that they support us from a distance, you know, tacit approval. Door number two is silence on their part. They will not get involved. They will... allow us to proceed and see how it turns out. And door number three, obviously, is where they come out in opposition to us. So my question is, do we want to leave three doors open, or do we want to close one of those doors now from a practical standpoint so we know where we're coming from?
Well, I can probably get, you know, have a conversation with them, or I don't know if I can get anything signed particularly, but I can probably get a statement from them as to whether or not they would be silent or against us. if we were to pursue
that
action.
I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about us. If they are going to oppose what we do, do we want to shut door number three now? And absent them accepting door number one or door number two, we leave it alone because it's not worthy of the risk inherent in pursuing it? Or do we want to leave all three doors open? I think we can make that decision now.
That's a pretty simple vote. So the decisions are, we can put that up to a vote right now. The decision is, if on one side, a yes vote here will say that we will not perform any action if the Hammonds are to come out against any action in support of them. Am I correct in what you're getting at here?
Let me see if I can make it simpler. How many think we should leave door one open? I agree to open on door one.
Yes.
What?
Door one being that they support what we're doing, even tacitly.
Yep.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, door two is where they sit back and do nothing but agree not to turn against us. We leave that door open.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, door three is where the indication is that they will turn against us if we pursue trying to help them protect their life, liberty, and property.
If they turn against us?
If it appears that they're going to turn against us, if they don't agree to sit back silent, if they don't agree to door one or door two,
then door three is closed, according to me.
Pardon me?
Yeah, door three is closed.
I agree, it's closed.
Yep.
Door three to me is potentially open if there's another viable option. I don't know of it at this point. But
now, if they go with door one or two, that's when we start investing time and writing a history of the project, and then Dennis and John get to sit down and figure out how we're going to approach this. But we did discuss some ideas, and I'll throw one at you. If we called for a demonstration there, or got other people, Pete Santilli and others, to call for a demonstration, and the Army people met 20, 30 miles away from the courthouse, The armed people, once we got a body of 100 people armed, they would move into the area, but they would leave their weapons in the car, stay near their car. And once we get the second 100, because I think you'd need at least 200 to be effective, that then once the second 100 arrives, then everybody pulls out their guns, and all of a sudden it's an armed camp. Now, we might lose some demonstrators at that point, but at least we've kind of wiggled our way into an effective posture rather than get the road going in with rifles. So if it was sieging the courthouse, that was something that Ryan and I and Ammon came up with yesterday, just for an explanation of that scenario. But I think it would fall on John, the whole board, but John and Dennis in particular, to come up with a plan, but I don't see much point in wasting a time until we know if they're going to go with door one or door two.
And now, is turning themselves in, is that an act of going against us?
That's,
we're sitting here telling them to not turn themselves in. They have the right to just sit quietly in the chair and not say anything, and we'll, you know, as long as they say they're going to sit there in the chair, they don't need to take up arms. They're just going to sit on the couch in the house and hang out. But
well, I think the purpose,
and that's door three.
One of the purposes behind the courthouse idea is to demand that they rescind the order, the sentence, that they overturn their decision to sentence the Hammonds to time in prison. And so it almost seems like that would be something that would have to happen before they were supposed to turn themselves in on January 4th.
And so we were looking at perhaps January 1st or more likely January 2nd to begin the siege of the courthouse, to put it in perspective.
Right.
But if they're, you know, if they're insistent on turning themselves in, at that point we can expect that they will disavow us. That would be a door three situation if they, after the family meeting, they're not willing to work with us to some degree. I think that becomes door three if they insist at that point we want to turn ourselves in. Because they will take what they want. They've made the decision, and they'll go public with that decision. We want to turn ourselves in.
Agreed.
Yep. Yeah, because, you know, the BLM is doing this everywhere. It's not the last one. It's not going to be, it's not the first one, not going to be the last one. They're constantly doing this. So
we need to find somebody that is willing to work with us if we want to really assure ourselves of a successful consequence of our actions.
It's a constant war. We can't win all the battles. But
yeah, but you don't go into battle if you're going to lose, you know.
Exactly.
And that's where I'm telling us that unless we have their support, we're going in to lose the battle. No matter whether we win or lose, we're going to lose the battle.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask Ryan another question, please?
Yes, sir.
Ryan, what is your sense of the Bundys that if we indeed say it's door number three and we're out, are they going to take action on their own?
Yes.
And what would those be in your thoughts?
I think this option three is all they were doing, isn't it, Ryan, at this point?
Yeah. The Bundys have made it clear that they're in support of some type of action, regardless of whether the Hammonds, we'll just put it this way, regardless of what the opinion of the Hammonds is of that action. And
okay,
what
that action might be?
They haven't formulated anything in particular at this point, and you know, a lot of the conjecture and ideas that were coming about between the past 2 days, I'm sure are going to go back to them. It's hard to say, because if I tell the Bundys that we decided that we're not going to do anything about it, that's going to weigh pretty heavily on their decision, I'm sure.
Well, that's not what you can tell them until the Hammonds answer, though, because we've only closed one of three doors.
Yes, but it is opposed to their statement, which says that they don't really care what the Hammonds have to say.
Well, then, the only thing I see is, like John says, you know, you can put enough people there in front of the courthouse to attract media, you know, to educate some people, but that's about it.
Well, that would be something Santilli could encourage, not associated with OMD.
Yeah, that's just not the... We don't want to get involved in protests. Unless that's a decision that everybody has to make, but in my opinion,
that's mine too.
We don't want to get involved with them.
We're civil defiance, not civil disobedience.
Yeah.
But
Aren't they wondering?
Have that idea that I mentioned in the first part of the conversation where he would buy or lease the allotments from, you know, this is one possibility that would, from a public relations standpoint, would be beneficial to the whole Hammond side of the story, where he would lease the allotments, then he'd go out and set fires immediately. And then if they don't respond, come out and arrest him, then there's good press for the Hammond side of the story, but that's between the Bundys and the Hammonds at that point. And I don't know if they've got any other ideas, but that's one that Hammond mentioned yesterday when we had that conversation.
Well, somebody else was about to say something, I think. No?
Nope.
Yeah, Hammond mentioned that, you know, he could purchase the allotments from the Hammonds. So the government has rescinded the permits that the Hammonds had in order to graze the land. that is, you know, whatever they refuse to call it BLM land, but it's land managed by the BLM that they had. But they still own the rights to it. They're just, it's just that the management agency is not allowing them to use those rights.
The government,
so Ammon,
like they have the right to deny the right that they was purchased, huh? Is what it amounts.
Right. And so the Hammonds could sell those grazing rights to the Bundys, and then what he's getting at is that you know, they would go out there and do a study and show that the land is being choked by the dead grasses, and so a prescribed burn was necessary, and then you know, set the thing up, perform the prescribed burn, which obviously would be the same exact thing that the Hammonds are being put in prison for. Now, Ammon also said that he would do that if he had a if he had a protective mechanism to ensure that he wasn't going to be arrested, basically showing the Hammonds that there is a support for it.
Now, see, I believe that that option three is one that OMD basically we're dealing with Bundy Ranch continuation, that the defense of Ammon's right to deal with the allotment land to the best benefit of grazing on it, that OMD could support that, but the Hammonds are out of the picture at this point, and we know the Bundys are going to stand tall on their responsibilities with regard to the relationship with OMD.
Yes. So at that point, then, we would have to make sure that Ammon or, you know, whatever Bundys are involved are not arrested for setting fire to their own grazing land. But that's more of a demonstration is the difficulty. I mean, you can almost call it a protest.
Well, it's more along the lines of defiance than disobedience, because they know what happened to the Hammonds for doing the same thing. So we're talking defiance, which kicks in the criteria for OMD.
Well, yeah, I agree. And surely they're not going to go they don't straight protesters very often, but people in defiance they do arrest.
Well, they haven't arrested anybody in defiance directly yet. They've gone after them after the fact.
Yeah.
I have a question. I got a question for you, Ryan.
Yes, sir.
Now, you said the Bundys are going to do something regardless, with or without us. If we don't do something along with them, is that going to hurt our relationship with the Bundys?
Well, while Ryan's thinking, the conversation we had yesterday, my impression is if the Bundys do something, that it will be without the Hammonds, except with the possibility of purchase or lease of the allotment land, so that they had legal control or lawful control over it. In that case, you know, I think we should support them. If they come up with something else, I think we'd have to look at the particulars of what they might propose. But I think in that case, it would be...
The Bundys really and truly believe, especially after the support they received, well, as a result of the support that they received at the ranch, that the militia is the proper defensive mechanism for the people. And, you know, they've been assured and they feel the protection of the militia even to this day. You know, with the people that have stayed at the ranch and they keep a watchful eye on them and maintain communications. So I think that if we didn't stand with the Bundys, that it would surely diminish our the notion of our fortitude in the cause to them.
The Bundys can only do so much, too. It's not like they can kidnap them as well, either. They're right there in the same boat. We can only do as much as we can, aside from our falling just short of kidnapping. So
the Bundys believe very in the notion of where there's a will, there's a way. And so if the point being that if they believe, as they've stated in that letter, that a defense needs to be made, regardless of the opinion of the Hammonds, I don't question the Bundys and their conviction. I'll put it that way.
I don't either, but remember the Bundys have given 110% support, and we're dealing with somebody where the militia, for want of another term, the people that OMD calls out, are facing a risk and humiliation. And there would be no humiliation at the Bundy Ranch because we've got their support. But absent that support, we've got to look out for OMD, not for the Bundys, not for the Hammonds. That's why, to me, I would support option 3 or anything else they came up with that was distant from the Hammonds, where the Hammonds weren't a factor in what was happening.
Yeah, I just mean in answer to your question, I do believe that the relationship with the Bundys would be hindered if we did not support an action that they took.
The Bundys took.
A rightful action, yes.
Yeah.
All right.
But Hammond, I think, understood yesterday when we talked that we have to have some degree of support from the Hammonds. At least that's the impression I got from him in that conversation. And I think he fully understands it. He might not agree with it, but he did seem to understand that, you know, you can't help those that don't want to help themselves.
You can lead the horse to water.
What?
I said you could.
One point, gentlemen. Perhaps if we're considering doing a joint thing with the Bundys, it might be useful if it proceeds forward at some point to have one of them present on the call, so we're not speculating on what they're thinking or not thinking. I know that you guys have a good relationship with them, but for example, I've never met the gentleman, so I don't. It's sometimes easier if you hear their words to see where they're coming from. So those are at least
sure.
My thoughts.
Sure. Yeah, I don't think that would be difficult. And in fact, you know, Hammond has a very high regard for what it is that we're trying to do. And the whole entire family, Mr. Bundy especially, has a very high regard for this effort as well. So I don't think it would be difficult to have them sit in on any type of call. But there again, they're very thoughtful. And they have their family meetings, and they go through a great depth of discussion on every issue. And I can't see that the Bundys, you know, especially Cliven, is going to approve of a letter, you know, that says basically something needs to be done with or without their approval and not toe their own line.
Yeah, but he didn't say what should be done, and you know, that I don't know that he would suggest that the thing to do is to go against the Hammonds. Without their approval is one thing. That's doors one and door two, both of them. I mean, and maybe one is even broader, that they're 100% behind us, but at least door two. But door three is the one that, that you know, we were unanimous in door one, unanimous in door two, and I don't know if we were unanimous in door three or not, but we had at least
3-2.
3-2, okay.
Yeah.
Who was the other two? The
Me and Dennis.
Okay.
And I'm at the point where I need to see something viable, but again, I'd at least be willing to consider it.
Yeah.
Well, if a plan could be made, but I think at this point I would move that we table this until the family meeting and we get the results of that. But one question before we proceed, did you record any of the conversations, Ryan? with me?
I recorded the conversation between us and Mrs. Hammond. And with the sheriff, yes.
Okay, so we need to get those in Dropbox so we can get a better sense of Mrs. Hammond and the sheriff. Is it Ward? Is that his name?
Ward, yeah.
So if we can get those in Dropbox, I mean, with the exception of that, I think we need to wait until after the family meeting before we even consider anything. Now, it could be that we could open door three if anybody has any ideas, but I think before we proceed and waste our time, we need to know what the Hammond's position is going to be.
I would concur.
Okay. Anybody want to third that?
I agree.
Yeah.
All in favor?
Okay.
Aye.
Okay, I think we're unanimous this time.
So we're going to table this.
I want to put that way is because we have some time, because the decision point, true one, is until the 4th of January.
Well, it's going to have to be made by before Christmas, I think, for us to be able to get done.
No, but
we've got
but
a lot of planning to do.
but it's not going to kill us to spend 2 days waiting on their decision at this point. It's not like
right.
It seems to turn on
hurt anything. Fortunately, we've got a lot more time than we had at the Bundy Ranch.
Yeah. That was all the point I was trying to make. We do have a couple days to see what they're going to do and if anyone else is going to reach out to them.
So, Ryan, you can either get those to me and I'll put them in Dropbox, or you can put them in Dropbox. And then once they're whoever puts them there, let everybody know they're there, and we can all get kind of caught up on the inflection in the voices and everything, get a better grasp on or better feel for the position of Mrs. Hammond and Sheriff Ward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just a heads up, I got a, let's see, it's about 6:10 now, my time, and I'm going to have to head in at 6:30. I got to do a tag team with the wife and let her go to her AA meeting while I watch the kiddos, so.
Well, I think that's all the business we had on the agenda. I do want for Ryan's information and those of the rest of you who might know who William Wolf is, he was convicted of both counts, Ryan.
William Wolf?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Ryan, you and I need to talk about that sometime and see if there's anything that we need to start developing or not.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's as far as an OMD issue, it's not. I mean, I guess if you guys want to familiarize yourself with what's going on with William Wolf,
I can send you,
you know,
a link that'll give you what I've written on it.
Yeah. I think I've already done reading, but are you guys looking at any viable options?
Well, that's what we got to talk about. I don't know if there is one or not. I mean, do we want to break somebody out of prison or not?
Yeah.
I mean, it being transported, he won't be sentenced until January or February. I'm not sure of the sentencing date, and he'll probably remain at Yellowstone, but when he's sentenced, sometime after he's sentenced, he'll be transported.
Yeah.
That's the option, basically, is, well, and then if you're going to do that, you have to start looking at all political prisoners. See Robbie Massey, Robert Beecher, just to name a couple.
Well, Beecher's in prison already. Massey's in jail, and Wolf's in jail. We've got two people in jail. The difference between Massey, though, is Massey is willing to go to the appellate court, so breaking him out wouldn't do any damn good because it would take away the possibility of changing the law. Beecher's in prison already, so that leaves only Wolf as one that has the potential on that. I don't think we're going to go after a prison. I mean, the only logical time would be in transit. I think. Any opinions on that?
I maintain the possibility of all options as far as such things are concerned. But, you know, it's definitely a lot more risky to go after the facility than it is in transit.
Yeah, and I think we got to win a couple battles before we take on a big battle. And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's one concern on what you just brought up is the fact that given the nature of the mission here, any of them could be the last one.
That's true, but just like we mentioned earlier, there's going to be more ranches where BLM comes in to try and steal their land. We still don't know where Red River's going and where Abbott's going to stand on that. What is this other guy, Clevis? What's the story with him? So there's going to be more. There's always more. We're dealing with the federal government.
Yep.
Yeah.
The octopus.
Okay. Well, I guess that's all we have at this time, right? If you guys want to catch up on the William Wolf stuff, and there again, the only thing that we could possibly be discussing at this point is setting him free. And I don't know that it's any more risky than what we're talking about as far as the Hammonds go. So,
well, we'd have a willing participant, I know.
And
oh, yeah.
Do you have the available resources up that way?
Montana.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to be too revealing on particulars, but any specific action that required a certain skill set and level of experience on when we're talking about small unit tactics can be achieved anywhere.
Okay.
Now, if he goes to the prison they had him at before, that's a three. How far was that drive? 180 miles, three and a half hour drive from Billings to I think it was a federal prison he was in, or they were going to put him in. It's in one of my articles, but I think it was a federal facility.
In Great Falls?
No, it was over the northeast side. Let me see if I
northeast can... side?
Yeah, let me see what I can... Yeah, it's outside of some small town, but let me see. I think I can find the name real quick. If I can find the folder real quick. Oh, there it is.
Do you still use real folders?
No, I use the little yellow ones on Microsoft. Yes, I do. You know, I've got on Massey, on Wolf, on most of the stories I cover, I do have folders in one of these vertical folder racks, and Massey's is... 2 inches thick plus an inch thick on the articles I've written on him. So, yeah, they're on paper, but everything is also in other folders.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your search.
Well, yeah, I'm still old-fashioned that way. Crossroads Correctional Center. Shelby, Montana.
No, it doesn't. Oh, Shelby, okay.
Yeah,
that's pretty much north-northeast, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of open land between Billings and there.
Oh, yeah. It's, strictly open land. The towns that are in between there have a couple hundred people.
Yeah, and so I think Shelby's not very large either.
Right.
The facility, though, is well fortified. I mean, it's got double walls and chain link and everything, but... that's why I say the safest place is in transit. So even if they had a lead car and a follow-up car and the transport car, it's a hell of a lot easier than assaulting a fixed position. And it can be done perhaps without gunfire, where assaulting a position would definitely require gunfire.
Either way, you're going to have shit raining down on you real quick.
Yeah, I was going to say, it might not require gunfire, but it's definitely going to require a couple explosions.
It's going to require some very good planning and very good escape planning.
Right.
Tannerite. Oh, shit.
But like I say, to me, I think it's impractical to consider going to a prison. If you can't do it in transit, it's foolish.
Well, especially in that region, because, you know, I know you're aware of it, Gary, but just so everybody else is aware, as a plan of a possible operational platform in the future, one of the things that has been discussed, and you can see it on some level with the Bundy Ranch situation, where we were able to create cohesion, very solid cohesion between the protest movement and the militia effort, in the sense that, well, you can look at a lot of those videos and you don't even have any clue that there's a militia effort there. And so the militia effort maintained a strict defense, a defensive stance that was separated from the protest movement and integrated into it, because a lot of those protesters were armed and were part of the plan. But the vast majority of the protesters had no clue of what the militia plan was. In that regard, on the same note, an operational consideration is to combine a protest movement with a militia effort in order to provide either infill, exfill, or both. And so, for instance, something like a dynamic entry into a prison, which could take place either from within or without or outside of a protest, totally outside of the protester's knowledge at all. The exfil, let's say that the safest exfiltration for that operation was directly into a very large group of people who are openly in support of freeing the man. And so, anyway, the same things have been talked about with a couple other instances on how to use a protest movement to secure entry or exit. But, okay, so is there anything that anybody else wants to bring up on any of these issues, or?
I got nothing.
No, I got nothing. Just looking forward to listening to those couple of tapes to get a feel for particularly Mrs. Hammond and the sheriff.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yep.
Well, then I guess we'll call it adjourned, and barring any updates, then I'll speak with the rest of you on Sunday. But, of course, feel free to give me a call at any time.
Okay, you know, the tapes of tonight's meeting will be an A and a B, the first session and the second session, just so you know, they'll be going in Dropbox as well.
Okay, so we should have a total of 4 tapes up there then.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm probably, since I'm going to be on the road here for the next few hours, Gary, whenever I get into your area, I'll just we'll get those recordings uploaded at that time.
Okay, are you heading south now?
Yeah. Jeez, it showed that I was. You want to stop the recording?